can open your Bibles to Matthew chapter 12. I can be incredibly critical of myself, you know, and I was preaching the Sunday night sermon on what the Bible has to say about the Sabbath, and I don't know if this ever happens to you when you're preaching, but often when I'm preaching, I'll get halfway through and think, this is so pathetic, I should just hang it up, you know, because I'm wound a little tight and a little critical of myself. Judy came to me after, well, maybe a week later, and she said, Pastor, that message set me free. And I thought to myself, Steve, would you just relax and let God do what he wants to do and just be obedient to preach his word? And the other thing I thought, I cannot tell you how desirous I am to set you free from anything that you find yourself wrapped up in that is unhealthy. And Judy, you made my day. You made my day. So thank you for sharing that. I don't know Jeff Dyer. I don't know him personally, but I have appreciated his sense of humor. What Jeff did is he had a website. The name of it was inhis.com. In his, like in his arms or in his hands. It meant in Jesus' hands.com. And what Jeff did on that, it was just a volunteer website. There were no ads on it. He wasn't selling anything. Every day he would sit down at his computer. He'd put a new story or a new set of jokes on that website. And I love that. Because, you know, I'm a geek, right? And I carry around my little computer with me all the time. And I'd be sitting in a hospital waiting room, waiting for someone's surgery or doing the pastor thing, and there's a lot of downtime there. But I always knew I could go to inhis.com to get a little joke or a breath of fresh air, a little encouragement. And one day I went there, and there were no jokes. It was closed. There was one page written there, and it really hurt my heart. It made me feel so bad. Here's what it said. It said, I have decided to discontinue this ministry for three reasons. One, because of lack of time. I just can't keep up with current trends in technology. And if you do technology, you know it changes so quickly, it's hard to keep current. Number two, Jeff said, lack of joy in doing this ministry. And you think to yourself, oh, that's sad. That someone who was consistently bringing joy to people every day lost his joy in doing that very thing. And number three, let me just read exactly what Jeff put there. I'm tired of trying to explain myself to the self-appointed, self-righteous guardians of ethic and morality. I've been accused of everything from intentional plagiarism to copyright infringement to unchrist-like attitudes and behavior. And I just don't want to fight those battles anymore. Now, although Jeff listed that third, that reason was the one he put in bold print. And for that reason, I think maybe that was not just the straw that broke the camel's back. I think that was the real issue. That Jeff had run into people who, like me, can be wrapped a little too tight. And he'd been kind of subjected to a lot of ungodly criticism. Have you ever been told that you're wrapped too tightly? I think a lot of us have. And in one sense, it's kind of a good thing to be wrapped tightly. I mean, if you're told you're wrapped too tightly because you pay all your bills on time, or if you're told you're wrapped too tightly because you do your homework Friday night instead of Sunday night, you know, on the weekend, that's inaccurate. Not really. A person's trying to make themselves feel better about themselves by putting you down. I don't think you're wrapped too tightly at all. You're wrapped and packaged quite nicely if you're doing those things, you know. But I'm not using the word that way when I speak about being wrapped too tightly. I'm referring to someone whose thinking is a little narrower than it has to be. Let me give you a couple examples. Maybe I'll just give you one example. I was talking to a group of men. As far as I know, only one of them goes to church. Most of them don't. We were talking about the price of gas in our fair city here. We were comparing it to the price of gas that's right down the street, down the stream, down the river from us, you know. And, you know, everybody gets bothered by the price of gas. And this one guy, he was really bothered by it. And he said, I'll tell you what, I would walk down to the next town to buy gas before I bought a gallon of it here, he said. Well, we were hanging around talking. A little bit later, he left, and the other guy said, "Whoa, he's wound a little too tight, isn't he?" You know, if he'd walked that way. That's kind of an example of being wrapped too tight. I sometimes think maybe the Grinch who stole Christmas was wrapped a little too tight. And Dr. Seuss says this. He says his heart was two sizes too small, you know. Now, listen to me. As I speak to you today about being wrapped too tightly, I don't want you to think I'm being mean to people who have this struggle. I don't want you to understand me as trying to say that they're evil. I don't want you to see them as bad. I want you and I to see them as Jesus saw them, to have pity on them, to have compassion on them. And I want to help you respond to them in a way that's healthy for you and healthy for them as well. Now, we are going to read the passage, but I want to talk to you just a little bit more in preparation. There are a couple of different responses you can have when you're around people who are wrapped kind of tightly. One of the responses is, sadly, you can get sucked right into it and become that way. That happens. I would say that's the most tragic response that could happen. That tendency toward obsessive behavior. And it's not just a spiritual phenomenon. I think it's a psychological phenomenon as well. That tendency toward obsessive behavior in many areas of life can actually become contagious. I found myself wrapped a little tightly because of a roommate I had who was wrapped too tightly, and just being in the same place as him for a while made me that way. I was talking to someone recently and they said, "I just can't hang around with blank anymore because when I'm with blank, I find myself just really negative and critical." And I don't like that. It is contagious. When I'm around people whose heart is two sizes too small, I can almost feel my heart shrink sometimes. Some people, though, they react almost with admiration when they see people like that, and they get sucked into the darkness. Don't respond that way. Another response you can have is to react in anger. And all of us know people who have actually rebelled against God in anger because of well-meaning folks who maybe were wrapped a little snugly and took it upon themselves to point out the flaws, you know. And a person who was getting his flaws pointed out, said, "Hey, if that's what God's like, I'm walking away from that." In anger, they said that. You don't want to do that, because reacting in that kind of anger quickly turns into a bitter cynicism. And Jesus never reacted in that way. Number one, Jesus didn't get sucked into the darkness. Number two, he didn't react in bitter anger. He did react in anger sometimes because of what he saw, the damage that was done to these little ones who believe in me being caused to stumble. But anger isn't really the best reaction generally for us to have. A third reaction would be to respond in compassion. And that's how I see Jesus responding, even in a passage we're going to read in a few moments. My wife and I watch Monk on television. Anybody watch Monk? Put your hand up. Let me see. Yeah, Monk, the obsessive compulsive detective who just has to kind of straighten everything out. There. Okay, that's nice. Oh, your Bible's kind of leaning. Good night. While Jim was praying, I had my eyes open. I looked in the monitor. There is teetering on the edge of the VCR. I tried to move it back. It made a noise. I quit. But that was a very monkish thing to do because I'm wrapped a little tightly. That show Monk is a good show, and generally a pretty clean show. The character Monk is wrapped too tightly. He'd be straightening out my desk for months, if you've ever seen my desk. And it's a great show. It's been around, actually, I think as long as the Andy Griffith Show has. It's only 2 years short of the Seinfeld reign as being out there. Early in the show, he had an assistant who responded to his being wrapped so tightly in anger. And she would try to fix him. She would yell at him. She would do everything but swat his hands. She would get very frustrated, try to get him to loosen up. "Just can't you loosen up, Monk?" You know, and that didn't work. And after 2.5 years, they said that she left the show because of a contract dispute. But I kind of wonder if the show's writer realized they'd made a mistake with her character. And I kind of wonder, because they replaced her with another assistant who treats Monk with compassion, tries to help him overcome his difficulties, tries to help him to unwind and relax a little bit. And that kind of character has worked much better than the first in that context, because that kind of response is often a good one to anyone who's wrapped too tightly. You see, when you're around someone who's wrapped too tightly, you can respond in any of those three ways. You can get sucked right in, and you can become one of them. Or you can get angry, and I pray if you do that it's a godly anger. Or you can respond in compassion. And that's really what I think the way Jesus is responding here. Your Bibles are open to Matthew 12, right? Just going to read 8 verses here. At that time, Jesus went through the grain fields on the Sabbath. His disciples were hungry and began to pick some heads of grain and eat them. When the Pharisees saw this, they said to him, "Look, your disciples are doing what's unlawful on the Sabbath." Let's pause there a minute. Let me explain what's going on there. We grew oats on a farm, and we grew wheat on a farm I grew up on. I can remember when it was getting ready for harvest, you could go along, walk through that field and grab a handful and just pull it like this, and you've stripped the heads off. Then you take the chaff is in there, the husks, so to speak, and the grain, and you do this in your hand, and then you go, and you've threshed the grain, you got rid of the chaff, and then you can eat that wheat, and it's not exactly great food, but it'll do. In first century Israel, that was a pretty good thing to do. That's what they're doing. Verse 3. And the Pharisees are ticked. They said, "Why? Look at your disciples. They're doing what is unlawful on the Sabbath. They're threshing grain." Verse 3. He answered, "Haven't you read what David did when his companions were hungry? He entered the house of God, and his companions ate the consecrated bread, which is unlawful for them to do, but only for the priests. Or haven't you read the law that on the Sabbath the priests in the temple desecrate the day, and yet they're innocent? I tell you that one greater than the temple's here. If you had known what these words mean, I desire mercy, not sacrifice, you would not have condemned the innocent, for the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath." Now, when I was building the structure for this message, I was reading a commentary on Matthew by a guy who teaches at NIAC, the Alliance College. His name is David Schroeder. I think he's still teaching there. I think he was president there, in fact, for a while. He says that when you look at this passage and the ones that follow, you should ask yourself 5 questions to understand what's going on. And so that's what we're going to do. We're going to look at the questions from Schroeder and just see what the answer is. The first question is, what scruple is being violated here and why? In other words, what's the issue here? What's the conflict here? Well, you see that in verse 2 when the Pharisees say, "Look, your disciples are doing what's unlawful on the Sabbath." Now, the Pharisees, a religious group that was simply wrapped too tightly, they're distressed. They had a scruple, a rule they kept, that kept them from doing something, which Jesus' disciples were breaking. What was that rule? No threshing grain on the Sabbath. Okay, that's not a small rule. That'd be a pretty big rule. You know, the Sabbath is an important day in Israel. You know, the Sabbath is right up there with don't kill, don't commit adultery. Don't forget about the Sabbath, the Lord's Day. That's no small thing. And so the scruple that is being violated is that of keeping the Sabbath. Okay, what's the next question, Dr. Schroeder? Dr. Schroeder says, the next question to ask yourself, what expectation is not being met? What is it that they want Jesus to do that Jesus isn't doing? Well, the Pharisees expected Jesus, who was a rabbi, that is a teacher, to at least teach the Ten Commandments to the 12. I mean, you would at least tell them, don't be threshing grain on the Sabbath. They expect Jesus' followers to follow this tradition that has been handed down through literally thousands of years. Their problem is that Jesus isn't teaching observance of the Sabbath in their way of thinking and in their way of seeing it. It's Jesus isn't teaching what they want him to be teaching. Now notice, Jesus doesn't get sucked into their darkness. Here he is, he's responding to how tightly wrapped they are, and he doesn't say, "Oh yeah, hey guys, quit doing that. Don't do that. We need to live in the spiritual bondage that the Pharisees are in. Don't do that." He doesn't do that at all. He responds differently, which leads us to Dr. Schroeder's third question. By what principle is Jesus acting? And to answer that, you need to think about what's happening here. What's really happening here is they're not threshing grain. They're strolling along, stripping those heads, as I indicated earlier. And actually, what they're doing, you might think, you know, aren't the disciples stealing? No, the Mosaic law said you can go to your neighbor's land and you can go ahead and take what you can eat there. Just you can't take a bucket with you. There'll be no taking an International Harvester or a John Deere into his field. But you can go to your neighbor's land and help yourself there. And they're rolling those heads of grain. They're snacking on wheat. But the Pharisees saw that as violating the Sabbath. And you need to know that they were not understanding really what the Sabbath was for. I spoke on the Sabbath, as I mentioned, a few weeks ago. And we noticed on Sunday evening a lot of biblical concepts that relate to that day. One of them was this. God didn't create the Lord's Day, the Sabbath, to punish us or even to limit us. It shouldn't be a drudgery, a ball and chain that you carry around. He didn't create the Sabbath to force us to abstain from work. I've heard that taught. God knew you needed a rest, so you better do it, you know? And then it becomes a misery, in a sense. God made the Sabbath as a gift for us so we could enjoy Him. That might be the most profound thing I'll ever say about the Sabbath. Let me say it again. God made the Sabbath as a gift for us so we could enjoy Him. That's why He made it. That's why it's called the Lord's Day. It is to be a day of enjoying all that God has done for you and enjoying even all that you have done by God's strength in your life. You know, on the seventh day of creation, God rested, but not because He was tired. He's God. And He's the pattern that we're following. So it's not that you need a rest. You might. I could use one. But that's not the purpose of the Sabbath. He rested on the Sabbath because He was satisfied with what He had made. And that is why after every day, He said, it says the Lord looked and saw that it was what? Good. That's good. I can see God the Father, and I don't mean to be disrespectful. I just want to show you the people that they are, you know, because we don't believe God is some kind of abstract force. He is a person. And I can see God the Father sitting down with God the Son, and the Spirit is there, and they say, you know, that's nice. That's nice. Let's take a break here and just appreciate the beauty of what we have created. That's what the Sabbath was to God. And anyone who says that the Sabbath is not for enjoying God isn't only wrapped a little too tight, they're missing the point completely. They're missing the point completely. That's the principle. The Son of Man, God, He's Lord of the Sabbath. Dr. Schroeder's fourth question is this. How did Jesus correct this misunderstanding? How did He correct the misunderstanding that the Pharisees had here? And the bulk of the text is really what answers this question. He gave a biblical example of people enjoying, that is, taking pleasure in, that which is holy, that if you and I looked at that as tightly wrapped as I am, I would look and say, oh, I can't believe they're doing that. But look at what Jesus says in verse 3. He talks about David and his men. Haven't you read what David and did when he and his companions were hungry? He entered the house of God, and he and his companions ate the consecrated bread, which is not lawful for them to do. Do you see what Jesus is saying? He's saying that that which is holy is not meant to make you suffer. That which is holy is meant to meet your needs and to fill you and to give you all that you want. Esther, you have no idea how many times I talk about you behind your back. Esther has a rule at college. She doesn't do any homework on the Sabbath. It's not because she thinks God will hit her if she doesn't do homework. Or if she does. You got that? That's kind of confusing. It's instead that she just really wants to enjoy God on that day and all the good things. She doesn't want to be bothered with homework. And so she does that other times. Jesus goes on to say that the law gives permission for the priests to work. That's what he's saying in verse 5. And in the gentlest of ways, Jesus is teaching them that they're wrapped just a little too tightly. He doesn't put them down. He doesn't say it to put them down. He does it so they can be set free. He wants them to be loosed from this bondage that they're in. And then Jesus brings home the point. He says that the Sabbath isn't about empty religious ritual. And I say that because in verse 6 he says, I'm telling you, this is Steve's paraphrase, I got to tell you, you're into the Sabbath, you're into the temple and all that stuff, that can become empty ritual to you. One who is greater than the temple is here. That's Him. I got to tell you, if you have God in your midst and you don't see Him, you are probably consumed with empty ritual and tradition. They were. And the Sabbath is about loving God and loving God's people. That's what he says in verse 7 when he says, I desire mercy, not sacrifice. Don't be condemning the innocent. The Sabbath is about loving. The kingdom of God is about loving one another and showing mercy and gentleness. The Lord's Day is about the Lord Himself and worshiping Him and making Him the center of it. Dr. Schroeder has one more question. His question is this: what does this passage teach us about how we should relate to the scruples of others? That's a good question. Let me say it again. What does this passage teach you and me about how you and I should relate to the scruples of others? And I think one of the things it teaches me is that I and you, all of us, we need to relate to the scruples of others with Christ-like wisdom. You can pull several pieces of counsel, good counsel, from this passage in dealing with people who are wrapped a little too tightly, like your pastor. One is, you need to respond with patience. That's what Jesus did. By the way, if you used to read this passage like I did up until this past week, you probably always thought that Jesus was angry here. I always thought Jesus was angry whenever he was talking to the Pharisees, because these Pharisees, they're out to make his life miserable. Eventually, they're out to kill him. And so I assumed that Jesus was always ticked off when he's dealing with the Pharisees. But I see him in this passage, as I read it in context, as dealing with great patience and loving kindness. I say that because, well, look at verse 1. And the first three words of that verse say, at that time. At what time? At what time? Well, we got to look at the previous chapter. Well, look at 11:29. It's where he says, I am gentle and humble of heart. You'll find rest for your souls. I don't think Jesus is smoking a gun at him going, you guys are just wrapped too tight. I think Jesus just says, man, can you just unwind a little? Can I give you some rest for your souls? I think he's acting with patience and with love toward them, showing them that they're wrong, teaching them, helping them understand their error, just helping them to find the peace that passes understanding that comes in a relationship with Him. Another piece of counsel I derive from this passage is that when we respond to those who are wrapped too tightly, we want to respond with clarity. You got to respond with clarity. You know, generally being wrapped too tightly is a matter of a failure to prioritize correctly. And prioritization is because your thinking's a little foggy when it's misprioritized. When I was in college, there was a guy who was in my apartment. Can you imagine living with this guy? If he loaned you a quarter, as you're on your way back from the dining commons, you want to stop and play foosball, you say, can I borrow a quarter to play foosball? Yeah, sure. He'd give you the quarter, and he would never rest until you gave it back. He's like that afternoon. He's like, where's my quarter? You know, and that evening, where's my quarter? And the next day, where's my quarter? Hey, you still owe me a quarter from 2 months ago. It was me. It was me. I was that guy because I was just wrapped too tight. One of my roommates, John, he said to me, Steve, you really don't need to be that wrapped that tightly about everything. Can you just relax a little bit? And you know what? It changed my life. That's crazy, isn't it? I think he did that so that I could give him a lot of quarters. But I'm really the one that got the payoff on that. He responded to me with clarity and said, Steve, that's just not right. That's just not right. Jesus responded with clarity. I'm telling you, one greater than the temple is here. And that would be me. Don't be so consumed by these other trivialities. A third piece of counsel is to respond sometimes with authority. That might seem kind of crazy to you, but Jesus does that in verse 7. If you had known what these words mean, I desire mercy, not sacrifice, you would not have condemned the innocent, for the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath. There are times when you will see someone who is wrapped a little too tightly and you're just going to need to confront them. You're just going to need to say, you know, you're wrong here. And this little triviality that you're worrying about, this little quarter, or this little issue that you're worrying about, it's damaged you. And it's going to damage others. I hate to see you damaged. And I hate to see you cause damage to others. I hate confrontation, don't you? I hate it. But I got to tell you, if you won't confront those kinds of things, you're not being like Jesus. You're not really acting in love. You're not following Jesus' pattern as he dealt with the legalism of the religious folks of his day. In fact, sometimes not responding with authority when you know someone is wrong is making yourself an accomplice to their crime. It's just the truth. And sometimes you have to do it just in order to protect yourself so you're not sucked into the darkness. One more piece of counsel. Respond with balance. Respond with balance. You know what the opposite of being wound too tightly is, right? It's being loose. And you don't want anyone to say about you or anyone you love, that person has loose morals. No, that's not what you want to be. And you might look at a passage like this or a sermon like this or a story like this, and you might say, well, hey, let's just not pay any attention to the Lord's Day. The pastor, I remember him saying, God gave it to you to enjoy, so let's party it up, you know, and bring on the sin. That's not what Jesus is saying. He's not saying, don't be wrapped so tightly. Go ahead and sin. Jesus would never say that. What he wants them to do is simply to come under his loving lordship. And when he says what he says in verse 8, the last sentence in verse 8 there, he says it all. For the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath. Everything in your life that you might obsess about, like the Sabbath, or anything else that you might obsess about, really needs to be given to Christ and put under his lordship. I want to tell you, my heart aches for people who are wrapped too tightly. It breaks my heart when I see it. I know it breaks the Lord's heart. And I long to help them break free. Because think about it, as miserable as it is to be around what Jeff Dyer, the guy at the beginning of the sermon, called self-appointed, self-righteous guardians of ethics and morality, think how much harder it must be to be one. Think how miserable that is. What a joyless existence that would be. This morning, as we go to the Lord's Supper, I want you to just look into your life and say, God, are there areas of my life where I'm wrapped too tightly? I surrender those areas to the Lord of the Sabbath or the Lord of whatever it is.